which need to be studied to learn more about the unification of the weak and electromagnetic forces. It is these rare events that today's experiments are designed to detect. Yet Pickering, who as far as I can tell understands this theoretical background very well, still describes this change of emphasis in high-energy physics in terms suggestive of a mere change of fashion, like the shift from Impressionism to Cubism, or from short skirts to long. It is simply a logical fallacy to go from the observation that science is a social process to the conclusion that the final product, our scientific theories, is what it is because of the social and historical forces acting in this process. A party of mountain climbers may argue over the best path to the peak, and these arguments may be conditioned by the history and social structure of the expedition. But in the end, either they find a good path to the peak or they do not, and when they get there, they know it. No one would give a book about mountain climbing the title Constructing Everest. I cannot prove that science is like this, but everything in my experience as a scientist convinces me that it is. The negotiations over changes in scientific theory go on and on, with scientists changing their minds again and again in response to calculations and experiments, until finally, one view or another bears an unmistakable mark of objective success. It certainly feels to me that we are discovering something real in physics, something that is what it is without any regard to the social or historical conditions that allowed us to discover it. Where, then, does this radical attack on the objectivity of scientific knowledge come from? One source, I think, is the old bugbear of positivism, this time applied to the study of science itself. If one refuses to talk about anything that is not directly observed, then quantum field theories or principles of symmetry, or more generally, laws of nature, cannot be taken seriously. What philosophers and sociologists and anthropologists can study is the actual behavior of real scientists, and this behavior never follows any simple description in terms of rules of inference. But scientists have the direct experience of scientific theories as desired, yet elusive goals, and they become convinced of the reality of these theories. There may be another motivation for the attack on the realism and objectivity of science, one that is less high-minded. Imagine, if you will, an anthropologist who studies the cargo cult on a Pacific island. The islanders believe that they can bring back the cargo aircraft that made them prosperous during World War II by building wooden structures that imitate radar and radio antennas. It is only human nature that this anthropologist, and other sociologists and anthropologists in similar circumstances, would feel a frisson of superiority, because they know, as their subjects do not, that there is no objective reality to these beliefs.